The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
By the time I was 21, I was married to him with a child already. And there was no part of me that had thought at that point that we were not going to be together forever. I started to really realize, like, okay, I'm going to have to leave this marriage, because if I don't leave this marriage at some point, I'm not so sure I'm going to make it out at all. I have got to rebuild my life. And I finally get to this point where I want to start the process of exploring dating. I had came across somebody that I met on Hinge, and he caught my eye super quick. 100% physically my type. His Hinge prompts were so funny. He had a great job as a project manager. He was also my age. He looked really good on paper. He just looks me dead in the face and he says, "If you're not going and you're staying the night, I might as well just go ahead and get this over with." Again, I'm gonna say, "God, please let me get my shoes on and get the fuck out of here. Like, please just let me get the fuck out of here safe. Like, please don't let anything happen to me." And he goes in to kiss me, and I move to the left and kind of dodge his kiss. And he says to me, "Well, that was awkward." And I just kind of said to him, "I think we met awkward 12 minutes ago."
Raised by her grandparents in the South, Kenzie returned to her roots after her marriage ended. Embracing life as a single mom in her southern state, she eagerly anticipated a fresh start. She longed for companionship and the possibility of finding love once more. After exploring local dating options with mixed results, Kenzie discovered a texting companion who captured her attention. He was attractive, appeared kind, attentive, and genuinely interested in her, a refreshing change from the superficiality she encountered online. However, what began as a promising friendship with romantic potential soon took a darker turn when Kenzie found herself the victim of his unpredictable and abusive behavior.
So, growing up, I actually came out of a very broken family relationship dynamic. My birth mother and my biological dad were never together. I was raised by my maternal grandparents, and my parents that raised me, my grandparents, they have been together for like 45 years, but they got married so young. They've had a lot of struggles. And so I kind of watched that growing up, and their relationship hasn't always been the easiest. And so for me, it kind of created this false sense of what I thought a relationship should be, and didn't actually get the reality of how to create a healthy relationship. I'm a firm believer that you can be raised and grow up in one type of environment, but you have the ability to look at that and say, "Hey, that's not what I want for myself." And to be able to remove yourself from that and to be able to create the reality that you want yourself. My mom, she's actually my grandma, but I call her my mother, kind of just always had this, like, you are not to date until you're older in your teens. When it came to dating and sex and relationships, she would always just say, like, you cannot date until you're emotionally ready to date. In high school is when I kind of started really talking to boys and thinking about relationships. I met my long-term boyfriend when I was 17, and he had just turned 18. It was our senior year in high school. He played football, I cheered, and we had started talking, and it took off very quickly. Mostly because both of us had come from like broken homes, and we always just had that want of being wanted and needed, right? And I think that really played into how quickly our relationship escalated. And my mom had noticed some things that were happening that weren't technically safe or healthy. And she tried to get us to break up. We ended up staying together. And by the time I was 21, I was married to him with a child already. And there was no part of me that had thought at that point that we were not going to be together forever. And that was not mostly because I was in a position where I wanted this forever. I was actually in a position at that point where I knew being in that marriage was not where I was supposed to be. And that was because just not being mentally, emotionally, and verbally safe in that relationship, everything I did was always wrong. So I always would find myself trying to figure out how to be better, how to do things better. But no matter what I did, it was just like always getting right to being knocked down. So my entire childhood and adulthood, I have been in and out of therapy quite a bit. I had started going back to therapy, but again, it was one of those like on off things. It got to the point I had to be in therapy full time. I was just mentally and emotionally completely depleted, having thoughts that I should not have been having. And that's when I like really starting to look at my life and be like, what is the root cause of what I'm feeling? And you know the things that are happening are wrong and you know they shouldn't be happening, but it's like your brain has trouble differentiating that when that's been your norm your entire life. I started to really realize like, okay, I'm going to have to leave this marriage because if I don't leave this marriage at some point, I'm not so sure I'm going to make it out at all. And that was not because I was worried that he would do something to that extent, but it was mostly me and my mental health. In my marriage, the more I'm going to therapy, I'm learning to communicate a little more. Things start getting like a little better. We, at this time, we're fostering, we're getting ready to adopt, and we get orders to move to Japan because my ex-husband is in the military, and we have this baby, and, you know, it's moving towards adoption. He had come home and said, you know, I no longer want to adopt the baby, and that kind of shattered everything for me. And even though I had been working in therapy, trying to figure out how to continue this marriage, all of that came to a halt when that happened. I had put up with so much for so long, and we had this plan that we, you know, mutually agreed on. We just raised this baby for almost 2 years, and there was just no emotion when this was being told to me. And it was mostly just one of those things where it was like, I can't come back from this. And that's when I realized that I had to leave the marriage. That's the moment that like really opened my eyes to make me realize like, Kenzie, you've got to fucking go. And so in therapy is when, you know, my therapist had been validating me as much as I wanted to backpedal and say, no. I would sit in therapy and tell her these things and she'd say, you have to go. And so about 3 weeks later, I finally said, hey, I can't do this anymore. I have to put myself first. I have to be the best version of me for my daughter. I have to be the best version I possibly can for myself. I went through a lot of pain in that marriage, and I was with him from the time I was 17 to the age of 27. After I had left my marriage, I moved back home from where we were living. I left with nothing, and I have to start completely over. I have got to rebuild my life. And I finally get to this point where I want to start the process of exploring dating. All my friends at this point are still married, and I don't have any single friends. They have children, and mostly talking to my sisters about dating and a friend of mine who is married, one of my best friends. And I just tell them, I think that I'm going to try and go out on a first date. Dating apps are so big. That's kind of from what I heard was the only way really to meet anybody nowadays. And the one that I used was Bumble. And I start getting like a ton of matches, and I'm trying to go down through, pick out the ones that are the best, what I think would be the best match for me. I went out on a first date with a guy and we went to our local zoo, and it was terrible. The whole 45 minutes we were there, he really didn't even ask me any questions about myself. He was talking about how his stepmom, you know, was a bitch and how she's this horrible person. And she's ruined his life and has ruined all the relationships in his life. And the date ended up just being cut short because I was just like, I cannot listen to this anymore. And I remember feeling so defeated, and I just went home and deleted Bumble and was just like, if this is what dating is going to be like, I'm so screwed. I had gone out on so many different dates trying to figure out who I am, exactly what I want, who I want, what I want from them, and what works for me. during my time of just casually dating and just trying to stay open-minded, I had came across somebody that I met on Hinge, and he caught my eye super quick. 100% physically my type. His Hinge prompts were so funny. He had a great job as a project manager. He was also my age. He looked really good on paper. We match on Hinge. We chit-chat for a day or two. We exchange phone numbers. We had great conversation, and he was so funny. And being in this mindset of taking pressure off dating and just going with the flow and see where things lead, we had texted for almost 4 months. We were just friends. And over the course of this 4 months, obviously the more you talk, the more emotional connection you end up building with somebody. And he had asked me out on a date. And I was kind of hesitant at first just because he lives 2 hours away. And at that point, I was not open to being in a long-term relationship. But I just kept thinking to myself, this guy is like actually a really good contender. We've had a good friendship over the last 4 months. He, at the end of the day, checks off a lot of my boxes. And so at that point, I just said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to take him up on his offer and I'm going to let him take me out. And so we had planned a date and he had offered to come to me, but just something, it was just kind of telling me like, no, I would rather go to him. In my gut, I just did not want him in my space, even though we had been talking for 4 months as friends. So we make this plan to go to Topgolf together and I take the 2-hour drive. While I'm driving there, it ends up raining. And he says, hey, do you want to make like quick changes to our date since it's raining? We can't really be outside of Topgolf. It's cold out at this point. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Whatever you want to come up with, I'm happy to do. I said, I'm more than happy to cook us dinner if you'd like. If you want to run to the grocery store real quick, I can whip us up a good dinner and we can just chat. And he was like, well, I really don't feel like running to the grocery store at all. He's like, you can stop at the grocery store if you want to and then come here and then we can watch movies. I had said, you know, I don't really want to stop at the grocery store. I have never been to your town before. I wouldn't even know where to go to begin with. And I just drove 2 hours in the rain. Why don't we come up with something else? So he says, why don't we just order pizza and we'll watch movies at my house? And so I go to his home. He meets me out in the parking lot and I'm standing by my car and he whistles for me. And I turn around and he was like, hey, he's like, I just ordered the pizza. He's like, why don't we just take my car and we'll go pick it up together and we'll come back and watch a movie. So we get in his car and we're in the middle of a conversation just chit-chatting and all of a sudden this guy has like crazy road rage. Speeding, swerving in and out of traffic. It's raining, mind you. And all I'm thinking to myself is, oh my God, this guy might actually end up getting us into a car accident. So we get to the place, he gets out of the car and he starts walking into the restaurant before I even have a chance to get out of the car. Like, doesn't open my car door, doesn't wait for me, nothing. He's already walking into the restaurant. And he asked me to come in with him. So it wasn't that he said, hey, wait in the car. He just left me. So I get out of the car, I'm walking into the restaurant and we're kind of both approach the door at the same time and he swings the door open, walks in, and then the door shuts on me. And so we get the pizza, drive back to his house. On the way back, crazy road rage. He's cussing and driving crazy. And so we go to his apartment. We watch a movie. We eat pizza. We're talking. We're just talking about life. We're talking about his job and how much he loves it. And, you know, he's asking questions about my job. And it was fun. Like, we really were just clicking and we were laughing and having fun. And there was times where we would kiss each other and we would make out on his couch. And I was just like genuinely having a really good time. And so I just kind of all the things that happened at the restaurant and like the road rage and those kind of things just kind of went to the back of my head because it's like I'm having this good time and I'm really into this guy and he's really into me. And like, maybe like this is it. Maybe this guy is somebody that I could actually be in a long-term relationship with. The night's coming to an end and I still have like a 2-hour drive home and it's getting late. And he says to me, you know, if you don't want to drive all the way home, you're more than welcome to stay the night here. You can sleep in my bed. I'll sleep on the couch. It's totally up to you. Whatever you're feeling comfortable with. maybe I should stay. I've had a beer. It's late. I've got a really long drive home. It's still raining. And so the night continues for like another, 20, 30 minutes maybe. We're just chit-chatting. And I finally just say, it is pretty late. I was like, it's almost midnight. I said, I think I'll just go ahead and stay the night if you are okay with me sleeping in your bed. And I prefaced it with, nothing's happening. I just want to go to bed. And so as we're sitting there on the couch, we're like a foot from each other, maybe less than a foot from each other. And he just looks me dead in the face and he says, if you're not going and you're staying the night, I might as well just go ahead and get this over with. And this man whips out his penis and he starts masturbating. And in this moment, I don't know what to do. And I've told this story to a lot of people and they have said, well, why the hell didn't you get up and run? Or I would have hit him, or I would have said something to him. But when you're sitting there in somebody's apartment and they do something like that, you don't know if you're about to be assaulted, they're going to hurt you. You just don't know. And so I sat there completely frozen, scared, not knowing if I'm going to be hurt. I just know that I'm staring straight forward at the wall in front of me. And I'm just in my head like, God, please let me get out of here without getting hurt. Like, please, please, please let me get out of here without being hurt by this guy. And so he finishes. I just basically grab a tissue from the side table, grab it, clean off what was on my arm. I throw the tissue at him and I just say, I'm gonna leave. And second thought, I think I'll just go home. And I get up from the couch. I go to put my shoes on. I was wearing high tops, could not get my shoes on. I'm barefoot and I'm just like trying to put my shoes on because he's like just staring at me. And in my head, again, I'm just like, God, please let me get my shoes on and get the fuck out of here. Like, please just let me get the fuck out of here safe. Like, please don't let anything happen to me. And he's just standing at the island in the kitchen at this point. And I still can't get my shoes on. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I grab my shoes in my hand. I grab my purse and I go for the front door. And he meets me at the front door and he hugs me. And I'm just kind of standing there and he's got his arms around me. And I don't hug him back. And he goes in to kiss me and I move to the left and kind of dodge his kiss. And he says to me, well, that was awkward. And I just kind of said to him, I think we met awkward 12 minutes ago. And so I head straight to my car. As I'm on my way to my car, I try to call one of my sisters. Nobody's answering the phone. And I'm thinking like, still like trying to process what the hell just happened. I go get my car and I sit there and I just start sobbing in my car because it's just like, how the hell did I get myself into a situation where I could have been severely hurt? And it's like, I drove 2 hours to meet somebody that I thought I could trust, but really at the end of the day, did not know very well at all. Fast forward about 2 years after this situation happened, I ended up moving to the city where he lived, obviously just on my own. I had gotten a job here. And so I always kept an eye on him because I was scared to death to run into him. And I see that he has a girlfriend and I see him on all these different dating apps. And I had the time had asked my best friend to send it to her because it's like, I already knew the things he did to me. And I see that he's cheating on her. And something in my gut was like, you need to tell her. Typically, I would stay out of those situations, but like something in my gut was just like, you need to tell her. So we had told her. It took about 3 times of us seeing him cheating on her that she finally responded to it with, I'm leaving him. Her and I actually end up getting in contact with each other, and we had an hour and a half long phone conversation. I told her what he did on our date. And she starts telling me that throughout the course of their relationship, which was about a year and a half, almost 2 years, because they ended up dating shortly after him and I had met, that he had actually been physically hitting her pretty much their entire relationship. She had told me that they went on vacation at one point during the duration of their relationship, and he had attacked her in his hotel room, and he had choked her to the point that she was unconscious. And I was crying on the phone because it was like, how did I get it so wrong? I'm one of those people that I want to trust you until you give me a reason not to trust you. That kind of situation is so scary. And to this day, I still keep tabs on him all the time. 3 days ago, I looked him up on Facebook just to like see where he was frequenting in town, to stay away from him, make sure I never run into him. I hope to God that he's changed. So I guess even though it's like I know that I'm emotionally mature and I'm smart and all these things and I know what I want in somebody, I think that at times I can still be very naive trying to look at the best in everybody. And it's all not always landed me in the best situations trying to date after a divorce. I actually took a break from dating just because I was so shaken up and so scared that, you know, something really traumatic just happened and it could have been so much worse. And after that, I went back into it with the intention of having a purpose for dating. And my purpose was to try and find a partner. And a couple months after that, I did meet a man and we dated for almost 5 months. He was so incredible and he like had actually restored my faith in dating. He was just made me feel safe all the time. His presence was just like this calm, safe person. And we ended up breaking things off because I ended up moving 2 hours away to the city that I'm in currently. I can have standards and expectations and what my goals are, but that doesn't always mean that everybody's going to meet my expectations and my standards, and I have to, you know, keep moving forward.
When I spoke with Kenzie, I asked her if the man who assaulted her were to hear this, what would she want him to know?
My hope would be that he obviously knows what he did was wrong, knows that what he's done has changed the course of the way I feel about certain situations and dating and being able to trust people. And I would hope that after what he's done to his first girlfriend, that he's learned a lesson and that the things he has done has permanently changed people in a negative way. But if there's anything I have also learned throughout the course of dating after divorce, is that you can talk to somebody until you're blue in the face. You can communicate to the best of your ability. Even if you are a high vibration communicator, they are not going to listen. They are not going to comprehend it. They are not going to care if they just don't want to. And with that said, I have had to very much learn that sometimes I have to just learn from the experience. I have to let it go and I've got to move forward.
And I wanted to know more about the judgment she faced based on some of her decisions.
Over the last 3 years, I have had so much judgment thrown at me, whether it pertains to being divorced, used to being a wife, my career, you name it. I have had so much judgment thrown on me that at times it has caused me to change the course of what I thought I should be doing with my life. If there's anything I can say to those people, and what I would tell them is that you have no idea what somebody is going through until you are standing right in their shoes and you're put into the exact same situation. You don't know how you would react. You don't know how you would act. You don't know what you would say. You don't know what you would physically do in any type of situation until you are placed right in the middle of it. And I think a huge downfall with our society today is that people make assumptions without asking questions. And it leads to really negative outcomes. And I just have to say, if you were ever one of those people who has judged somebody in a situation that you weren't in, ask questions. Try to even remotely put yourself in their shoes to try and understand how that person felt in that moment.
I also asked her about her support system and if there are any insights she'd like to share about how someone can create their own.
I have one of the most amazing support groups. I was actually having a conversation recently. This was with somebody that was actually very, very close to my ex-husband and knew us when we were 20 and 21. And he had just joined the military. And this was one of his old military friends. We're very close now. And I was having a conversation with him. And this was the first time I had ever opened up about my marriage to him and like the things that were going on and disclosing all that information to him. And one of the things he said is, I hope that you have a really good support system. And what I told him was that I wholeheartedly believe that everything I went through was for me to be able to gain the support system that I have now. It's friends, family, people that I have met through podcasting that live in other countries like Scotland and Germany, all these people that always reach out and just say, you know, just checking on you. Hope you're doing well. I love you. You're such a great person. I'm so glad that we crossed paths. And it's like, I really genuinely, wholeheartedly believe that everything that I have went through brought me to these people that are just some of the most amazing, courageous, kind-hearted people. Obviously, I've met some not great people over the last 3 years, but 97% of the people that I have met over the last 3 years have become my biggest support system.
And finally, what inspired her to become a true crime podcaster? And what does that work mean to her?
So during the time of my marriage, when I was just mentally and emotionally not doing very well, and I was in therapy, my therapist had suggested that I really needed to find something outside of my husband and my daughter being a foster parent and also going to school full time. So she said, you need to find a hobby. You need to come up with something that's going to be an outlet for you. And I want you to kind of step out of your comfort zone with it. And I had been taking a communications class at the time, and one of my projects was a mock podcast, and the feedback that I got on the project was phenomenal. And my wheel started turning, and I was like, maybe this could be a hobby for me. I have no idea what I'm doing, have never done anything like this before, never created content, never once crossed my mind to put myself out there in the public. And so I took that leap of faith. I started a podcast. And I came up with something that I was very passionate about, which was true crime. And that's because at the time, and still continually, going to school for my criminal justice degree. And I started meeting a lot of families from the podcast who would reach out because they have a missing or murdered loved one, or I would reach out to them. And those families that I've worked with over time just made me realize that at a time where I felt so broken and just so depleted, I can give something to somebody to make them feel a little bit better when they're already going through a nightmare. And it just was like, gave me like a whole other sense of value being able to give something like that to them. These were people that were becoming my family. So it gave me a little bit of, you know, you're doing something good here, which then started restoring value in myself. So I have continued over the last 4 years to work as a podcast host and recently started a new show as a solo host. And I feel it in my bones that this is what I was meant for. I wanted to take this show and go more in depth on these cases than I used to on the old show. I would work with these families, I would interview them, and I'd tell their stories. But on Inside the Case, my goal for this show is to really hone in on my passion of being able to connect with these families, bring them justice, and really work towards giving them the closure that they're seeking by investigating these cases one-on-one with them and by myself. And I want those families to know that I'm here for you. I'm going to see you and I'm going to listen. And I'm going to be your voice if you feel like you don't have the ability to have one.
Kenzie's sense of security was shattered, leaving her grappling with vulnerability and confusion. She blamed herself for not seeing the signs of his true intentions and deeply questioned her judgment. Reflecting on how someone who seemed perfect on paper could hide such red flags, Kenzie realized she ignored many warning signs initially, wanting to see the best in him. Despite the trauma, Kenzie found strength in her resilience and determination. She discovered a newfound purpose when she encountered someone else going through a similar situation. Using her instincts and experiences, she was able to help another woman who was being abused by the same man. This experience not only empowered her to share valuable insights, revealing his patterns of abuse, but also led her to discover profound truths about herself, laying the groundwork for a clearer understanding of her own future dating scenarios. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating and relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.